We're here to talk about GM-less role-playing games, right? Yeah. My name is Ben Robbins. I'm a game designer. I've made a couple games. I've made a game called Microscope, which we'll talk a little bit about, but not really that much. There's a couple other games we're going to mention. These are just a few of the many, many story games that are out there. I'm just going to put them up here so it looks like I'm using this table. Glorious. Before we get started, how many of you have played GM-less role-playing games? Excellent. How many of you have played any role-playing games? D&D, Pathfinder? Excellent. So you're like, what the hell is this guy talking about? Have you heard about GM-less games in other places? No? Little nodding, little mix and mix? Okay, good. When I used to give this talk, or to have this conversation, at the beginning, everybody was like, what do you mean? I have no idea. And then more and more people would be like, oh yeah, we've played a bunch, actually. We've played a ton. So I keep kind of trying to gauge the crowd to see exactly where we're at. So first off, GM-less role-playing games have only been around for a relatively short amount of time. We've had role-playing games since, let's call it the early 70s, right? Really late 60s. But the idea of the GM, right, the invention of the GM, which is a marvelous invention. It was an amazing thing that was created. Major Wesley, who ran the Bronzian Games, who was running a war game and who basically kind of unintentionally invented role-playing games, one of the things he did to solve the problems he had was to reintroduce the idea of the referee, but not just the referee, but the referee who also controlled the world and who built the world, which was a unique experience. Dave Arneson went off, played Blackmoor. Gary Gygax went off, played Greyhawk. We got D&D. And then for about 30 years, we kept doing that, and that appeared to be the only way we could do role-playing games. Or we just assumed that was like what it meant to be a role-playing game. You had the GM controlled the world. If you were a player, you had a character. Your province was your character. That was your territory that you controlled in the game. And you were a vital member of the game, but the line was pretty sharp. Some people, I mean, like, there's variations of that where people would play games where, particularly now a lot more, where the players might have more importance to the world, but traditionally that's the line. Often if the GM is introducing you or asking you for input into the world, they're asking you. It is still their control, but they're letting you onto their side of the fence, as it were, instead of something that you inherently have. So like I said, we as GM-less games have only been around for maybe, let's say full bore, like 10 years, tops. And that was still like very fringy. People just started experimenting with it and starting to say, what can we do that maybe we haven't looked at before? And that's kind of going to be one of the main themes of this talk, is that the things we have done for 40 years in role-playing games are a tiny, tiny fraction of the things that are possible. And in a way, I play GM game series. I should get this out of the way. I love GM games. I was a GM for 25 years straight, you know, hardcore, ran West Marches, just all about the GMing, right? Loved it. But it's only one way to play role-playing games. And in a way, and this will sound like a criticism, but I think this is like tough love, by having this established relationship where the GM has so much control over so many things, we have avoided difficult discussions that we need to have about what are we doing in this game? What do we all want to do in this game? What do we agree to? What themes are we interested in? We have, and I say this as a GM who has done this, we have too often left it to one side to say, well, they'll decide what the game is about and we'll like it or not, but it's really not a group conversation. And that has prevented us, I think, from getting into some really interesting areas and having games that were about very serious and interesting things that, in order to play those games, you do have to have a discussion amongst yourselves. You do have to agree. You have to volunteer to talk about those issues, potentially very serious issues, societal issues, or even just very dramatic stuff. With a good GM, you can do all of those things. It just is, you're taking a risk because you haven't really gotten, I don't want to say consent, but I'm going to say consent, exactly, right? So jumping slightly ahead a little bit. When I talk a lot, I'm going to frequently say story games when I mean to say GM-less games, and forgive me in advance for that. And the reason I'm going to do that is because there's a big overlap between the two, that a lot of story games are basically role-playing games in which, in addition, instead of just being your interface into the game being a character and you say what the character does, you have direct interface into the subject matter of the story. You get input into the story. You control things. You might actually choose to make things themes of the game, etc. You are part of the story, not just an actor controlling a character in the story. And as we will see as we talk about it, the concept of a GMless game where you divvy up authority over control of different parts of the game make story games infinitely more possible. That's why the Venn diagram between story games and GMless games is quite huge. Though there are GM games, there's still story games as well. So when I say story games, don't think I've lost track of what we're talking about. The other thing that's weird, again, to kind of get this out of the way, we're talking about a definition that is about the absence of something. If I go up to somebody and say, hey, you want to play a GM-less game? They're like, what do you mean GM-less? And I'm like, well, there's this thing it doesn't have. I'm like, what's that thing? It's a GM. What's GM stand for? It stands for Game Master. What are you talking about? Right? I'm talking about a negative, which is a terrible way to describe anything. I play a lot with people who've never played role-playing games of any kind, so saying this is a GM-less game is pointless to them. They're like, I don't know what you mean. We have not, as a community, yet developed a proper term to describe games that are simply, you know, roundtable games, games in which we all have participation of some kind or another, games in which there's no one person who has particular control. We haven't done that yet. We should probably get around to that. If you guys have any ideas, tweet that. Yeah, what's that? Yeah, see, collaborative, that's the thing. I've had some arguments about this. Collaborative's correct, but collaborative, we'll talk about this. It makes it sound like we're just kind of, oh, whatever we all agree with is a group. Whereas a game, not a proper game, but let's say what we think of as a proper game often involves disagreement. We don't agree. We have different ideas about what should happen, and we are fusing our ideas together sometimes in a difficult fashion. So collaborative makes it sound like whatever we all agree to works instead of like, no, we may disagree strongly about the course the story should take. And that's fun. That can be very fun.
So is this basically GM-less or nothing but GMs?
Well, see, and that's a good question, too. That's the other argument, GM-full. People say it's GM-full. Everyone's a GM. Except here's what I think. The core definition of being the GM is that you are unique. You have a unique game master, right? You have a unique position at the table. You have a, whether it's intentional or not, you have a unique social status in the group. A lot of things fall into that. You might have control over the world, but also then you start getting social control. People start looking to you for social sanctions or to maintain control or to even decide what night we're playing. A lot of social behaviors glue on to that as a leadership role. So when you say GM full, what we really mean is the things that the GM previously did, like make the world, control characters, we're all doing that now, but that unique thing that made the game master this singular figure doesn't exist at all. So to me, it's weird to call it GM full when really we're all playing. We're all players. But these are semantic debates, and they're really not that interesting. But I had to get them out of the way so I don't stumble over them as we go. So here's the thing. So like I said, So let's wind back to, like, 2005. We've had GM games for 30 years, and we start realizing, like, hey, maybe we could play games without GMs. What would that be like? There's kind of two questions we could be asking. One is, okay, just like we're talking about, we're not going to have a GM anymore. Well, what are all the things that the GM does? We'll list them all in our heads, and then we're going to say, now someone at the table has to do those things. So we might divide up those things equally, whatever, portion in different ways. Different game systems will do that in different fashions. But now we've got the GM function covered by different people, right? That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is to say, maybe we don't have to play role-playing games in a way that we have at all before at all. Maybe they could look totally different. Maybe if we don't have a GM, a lot of the things that we kind of presumed were necessary or came along with it as I don't say baggage, that's not right, but side effects are no longer true either. And maybe it opens up whole new doors to exploring different ways we can play. And the first one, I have actually asked that first question a ton, and I've answered it a ton, and then I was like, wait a second, it's kind of kicking a dead horse. The more interesting question is, like I said, what haven't we done because we kind of had this GM? What were we limited from doing? For example, one thing is that when you sit down to play a traditional game with a GM, often what happens is that the story precedes the characters, right? The Game Master will design an adventure or come up with a plot or come up with a theme or come up with anything, right? The classic published adventure, right, is literally a predefined story, and you will then insert characters into that story, but it kind of doesn't matter which characters you insert, which is really, I mean, you're an adventurer, you're going to do a thing, if it's a vampire, you're probably fighting for your clan, whatever. But if you look at it from a point of view of narrative and authorship, that's crazy. You would never do that. You would never think of a story and then weld the characters into it. The characters are essential to the story. The characters are the heart and soul of the story, right? And in fact, you could even say that if you were to say, if you realized that, if you had that moment and said, like, wait, why are we making the story before the characters? You would tear all that down, and this is what GM's games do often. You go back and say, let's start with what is our story about? What themes do we want to explore? And you have that conversation as players. And often, a lot of these games we're talking about, like Downfall is a great example. In Downfall, you're going to build a flawed society. And the very first thing you do when you sit into play is say, what flaw do we want to explore? And you might say, let's talk about greed. Or let's talk about love as a flaw. Or let's talk about honesty as a flaw. Or let's talk about nationalism. We as players have that conversation. And we've agreed, yeah, I'm interested in that topic. I'm interested in exploring, you know, greed as a flaw. So that decision about theme precedes everything else happening in the game, right? We're on the ground floor of cooperation in that. Then from that, we say, if that's our theme, what elements do we build up? In Downfall, we're going to build up a world that has that flaw. And then from there, we're going to make characters that explore the themes that we picked to begin. But you see what I mean? It's a logical progression, just as though you are a really good author. You wouldn't start with, like, I got a gunfight. Why is that gunfight happening? You would start with, what is the core issues this character is going to interact with and build the story from there. Another thing is also I'm very flexible, so if you have questions midway through, just raise your hand and I will interrupt and jump to that. Another thing is that if you think of traditional games, remember the thing of like the bringing a big backstory for your character? Like, oh, I'm going to play in this game, but I wrote like 3 pages of backstory. And let's be honest, that's kind of, we're kind of laughing because that's kind of a joke. Like, oh, God, they wrote 3 pages of backstory. What's going on with that? And that's the saddest thing ever because somebody had an idea. They had this really detailed idea for their character. And I can bet you 15 cents right now that it did not come up in the game. So my sister was just cleaning up her old notes from the game I used to play with her in high school. And lo and behold, she found, true story, this happened like 2 weeks ago, she found the notes for her character from a Champions game that was a superhero. And she was like, oh, I found my backstory. I'm like, you have a backstory? She's like, yeah. She sent me a picture of it, and I was like, I don't recognize any of this. We played this game for 2 years. She's like, yeah, I don't remember any of it either, right? That was a whole story, a whole character concept that she came up with. It was detached from the game. It never happened, right? That is what we would call dysfunctional, right? It's someone's creativity getting just, like, put in a blind alley and never going anywhere. It's not cool. It's not good. In a GM-less game, I'd say that kind of thing, we take it the exact opposite direction. We say, instead of the character being your domain, your private area that's kind of in your head that will be exposed through play, the characters are visible to us all. When you make your character, I want to hear everything you come up with. I'm like, no, wait, tell me more. I need to understand your character. Because as co-creators of this story, we have to understand each other. Like, I have to know if your character has a vengeance thing or was betrayed or if you as an author want your character to be betrayed because I have to help make the story that will apply to that character. So the whole kind of like my creative work has been lost and thrown in a ditch, none of that happens, right? It's all on the table, it's on the surface, we want to know it. In fact, some of the let's say most uncomfortable game interactions I've had were with people who were used to, because I've played, like I said, I played old school games for millions of years. They will come in and be like, oh, here's my character. And I'll be like, oh, tell me what you're thinking. And they'll be like, no, I'm not telling you what I'm thinking. It's my character. And I'm like, no. It's like we're trying to make the story together. And they will, the culture shift is such a strong one that people will actively dislike it. And that's fair. You're allowed to not like different things. But it's a miscommunication to be like, no, it's not. This is a different style of game. It looks like the kind of game you're used to, but actually it's totally different. That's why I'm asking this question. Yeah?
On that topic, that's an issue I've encountered a lot. I'm wondering,
yep.
What are some tools as like storytellers that we can use to reach those language barriers, if you like, in the game?
I think what I recommend is starting off with something that is as far from what you're used to as possible. If you play a game that looks like, so you play, let's call it D&D, and you play a game that's a GM-less game, but it basically looks a lot like D&D, trope-wise and concept-wise, players will often just fall back on their old behaviors. If you play something radically different, like Microscope you play, which has no conceptual similarities to role-playing games you're used to at all, you know you're doing something different. It helps you break out of your patterns because there's no chance of just falling back on old habits. Some people will actively dislike it because they'll go, this is not the kind of game I like. I liked the other game. I liked D&D. That's what I want to play. And that's totally legit. People like different things. These are not interchangeable parts, and one doesn't replace the other. But if you want to try something new, it is often easiest to jump far spectrum. And likewise, the we're talking about like things we couldn't do before. Like in the traditional D&D game, we're a party. In most role-playing games, we're a party. We're on the same side, right? The idea of someone who comes in and backstabs another character, you're like, what are you doing? Like, we're a team. And there's feuding and there's rivalries. But at the end of the day, the game master is providing conflict and the players are hopefully working together to try to solve it. That's been the core. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes they fall apart. But you rarely see the group be like, oh, I went and formed an army and I'm going to come back and attack you guys. That's like awesome. You're like, oh my God, this one campaign with this guy led the kobold army to attack us. And part of that is just logistics, right? Like, we're sitting at a table. If you split up the party, the GM is like, wait, I can't talk to both of you at once. Hold on, I got to split you guys up. Now we got to go to another room, pass some notes, right? We have all this secrecy culture built into it, right? There's all these presumptions about why we couldn't do that. In GM-less games, because the GM is not the source of conflict, the GM is not the thing creating the trouble, which is a GM, the source of conflict is each other, right? We will often make characters that are adversarial. We will make characters that have conflicts with each other. We'll make characters that are going to actually try to kill each other and often succeed. We will play games that are one-shots, like, this is going to be a murder fest. Who knows who's coming out of this alive? And you know what's funny? That's like literature that you see. That's like movies you watch, right? The D&D party ain't normal. That's not really the normal interactions of most people, or that's maybe the wrong way to put it. That structure of the party can't turn against itself grossly limits the kind of stories we can tell. Whereas if we allow the party, the players, to maybe be allies, maybe be adversaries, whatever, suddenly whole new doors open up. You had a question in the back? Oh God, metagaming is the best. Yes, when I was a young lad, metagaming was like the worst thing you could say about somebody. Like, oh my God, you metagamed. Like, you made that decision because you knew he had just said this thing. It was a huge slur. It's like fighting words, right? When you take away secrecy is a big GM thing too, right? The GM has secrets. The GM has pre-knowledge. The GM came to the game with prepared adventure and knows things you don't know, right? That whole idea, gone. Forget it, gone. Imagine you're sitting at a table, and I know your secrets. I know you're a traitor, right? That's awesome, because as an author, I can then have my character go, oh, you know, you're the only one I can trust. The rest of the guys, they don't really know what's up. I mean, seriously, and that is the most fun you will ever have, is being utterly vulnerable and being like, yeah, you know, I will totally rely on the traitor. And a key thing to that, too, there's so many interlocking parts. It's like a jigsaw puzzle. For that to work, you're playing D&D, right? You fail a saving throw, right? You mess up somehow. You can get out of the game. You can lose a turn. Like, oh, you're paralyzed. Oh, you're dead. Oh, you trusted the traitor. Stabbed you in the back. You're out of hit points. Those hit points, you're going to want those because they make your character walk around. You don't have them anymore. Roll up a new character, or you sit and wait while we finish this combat, and then you'll play again. In the vast majority of the kind of games that I'm talking about, GM-less games and story games at large, that is not physically possible. There is no mechanical way to lose your ability to contribute to the game. Think about that for a second, right? You're in a car crash, your character blows up. Well, did you want your character to die? Yeah, dramatically. I think it's time for this character to die. Awesome. They're dead. Now you're somebody else. Or now you're contributing in a different way. Or now you're framing scenes about memories of your characters. It depends on the game. But you don't lose your turn because of things that happen to you. And even more so, and this is where it gets family friendly and just freaking awesome, there's less... Okay, like D&D, again, I love D&D. I love tactical D&D. I love, like, let's have a battle map combat. But if you're good at it, you live. If you're bad at it, you die, right? And if you're bad at it, you're penalized. Story games, again, does not happen. There's no, oh, you didn't play well, you lose your turn. You have equal contribution time regardless of what you're doing, right? And what does that do? That frees you up to embrace awesome, tragic things. Like, yeah, I'd love to have my character betrayed and thrown in jail for 30 years. That would be great. Now we can have whole scenes of me, like, you know, writing in my journal furiously or getting a visit from my daughter or just weeping and moaning. Like, that's awesome because it didn't remove my play. It's like, oh, you're in jail. You don't get to play, right? That does not happen. And that is an astounding sea change in play because when people come to the table, like, I've never played these games before. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, you know what? You're not going to get screwed over by not knowing how this game works. You're not going to get screwed over by making a poor tactical decision or by rolling badly. Or you just even, like, oh, we're more interested in this thing. No. In a lot of these games, they, again, going back to the what did we not do previously, a lot of these games have extremely structured turn-based systems. Like, it is your turn to frame a scene. Frame a scene about your character. We're going to go around a loop. Each of us is going to have a scene about our character. It's your turn. This is your scene, right? Everybody gets a scene. Not like... We love it. You got to metagame. It's the best. Metagaming makes the flowers grow. It's the best. Because metagaming is to say making things out of character that fit the themes of the game or that play to the themes we're working with. If I have themes and I've told you, like, yeah, my character's got a drinking problem because of, you know, this thing. Your character doesn't know it, but here's why. I'm like, oh, awesome. Okay, I'm going to totally play to that, right? And that's genius. If you didn't know that, if it was a secret, you would just be like, what? I didn't get that. Downside, there is something to really enjoy in a long-term, like, GM game where the GM has built and crafted an entire world and there's secrets and you learn secrets. You're like, oh, my God, I discovered a thing. That's a certain definite pleasure. This is not doing that. This is creating a different type of fun. So there are plus sides to both systems. Was there a question there? Yeah?
I was just going to add on to the metagame thing is that it's important to realize a lot of story games don't have statistics or stats, so there's no unfair, like, your character's not built to be a combat machine.
Yeah.
That's not even involved in the game.
Yeah. And there's the awesome, say whatever you want about your character, that's awesome. Oh, you're a strapping He-Man, scuba diver, Navy SEAL, fighting, you know, Cthulhu, lizard man at the bottom of the ocean? Doesn't matter if my character's a librarian. The narrative power, like I said before, the difference is that, think about the movie, right? The character doesn't get out alive because they're the most badass. They get out alive because we love them. The audience loves them. And we as players are both the authors and the audience. If we dig a character, we're going to spend our narrative powers to make them live. Think of it like, abstractly, the hit points are narrative hit points that we are giving to characters. Like, I like that character. I think she's plucky. She should get out of here alive. Yeah, and, you know, she escapes on the ship and blows the thing up.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I know of a camera name in a game, but it was an extremely good example of this because the entire premise of it is it's a Western movie. Pick your role. Are you the sheriff, the priest? And one of the options was just the devil.
Nice, nice. Excellent.
And so metagaming, the group I listened to playing it, they just kind of all wound up at the same place for the last scene, of course. And one guy says, and the premise of the game is, you bet something that you have. And everyone just says, yeah, they win the bet.
Yeah.
As a vote.
Yeah.
And one character at the end just says, I bet my life. Okay, yeah, he wins.
See, good story. That's a good story, right?
Yeah.
One of the very first GMless games I played, I was playing with my normal friends, and we were in very much a traditional mindset. And we were making characters. We were a bunch of heroes on a quest, like, to go find a thing. And we're like, And one of the mechanics of the game was that when you do each next scene, you pick a character again. And you can, the order changes. You can pick the character somebody else already played. And this gets to the next point, like, character monogamy. Is that my character, or is it just a character? And in this game, it's a character. So in the first scene, I had made this kind of Hercules analog person who was just, it turned out awesome, right? I just rolled well, I did great. And my girlfriend at the time was mad at me because she's like, wow, you just did too well in that game and you crushed me and I'm fine. I am taking that character this scene. And I was like, okay, fine. Well, I gotta be a character. I'm the Zeus analog. I'm your dad. Like, what? We're like on a mountain path fighting bands. I'm like, oh, I'm not. I'm up in the clouds being like, hey, son, you never call anymore. And so she's like, ah! So I'm just like, I don't care about the bandits. I'm not about the bandits. I introduce a new conflict, which is like something about like, there's like a maiden being rescued. I'm like, no, I'm the lascivious Zeus character. She's like, oh, I hate you so much. And then she's like, okay, fine. I get it. I see how this game works now. I got a point left. She comes in as the Hera analog, like Zeus's wife, being like, what are you up to? And the best part is this: we're having a blast now. Me and her are having a great time. And our third friend is still not getting it. And he is shooting bandits with his arrows. Like, I shot another bandit! And it was like, it was just a fascinating spectrum of each of us getting it at a different moment. And he was still like, why aren't you killing the bandits? They're there. There's so many bandits. But the point is, again, so like there's character monogamy, as in like, this is my character, I own this character. But then there's the question of, do you even have a character? In some of these games, you do not have a character at all. You have zero characters. You adopt characters, you put them on like masks in the moment to play particular things. You're not about characters, you're about the broad story. Microscope would be the example of this. You're dealing with the entire history. When you zoom into a moment to explore something that happens, you might choose who would be an interesting person to have in this scene, but you might never see this person again. We, as players of that game, have a much larger concern than just one particular person. And likewise, we are not tied to the interests of one person. We might be interested in them. We're like, oh, I like this character. I think they should do well. But maybe we aren't. It's up to us. So another thing, so like I said, we're doing things. There's a thing we do, too, where all the stuff I'm describing, unless I keep saying things like, it's like in a story, it's like in a movie, it's like in a comic book. When we used to play D&D, we were imitating D&D. I mean, D&D has its own style of pacing. There's there's campaign play. It's a continuous time loop. You might say, like, okay, then you sleep and you wake up in the morning and now you're marching. But often, the traditional game was a kind of continuous timeline, right? That's not the way, say, movies work at all, right? In a movie, you have scenes. You cut, right? When the cool thing happens, you go, okay, done. You said that, we cut. Now you're on a train. Cut. Now it's a meeting at the Pentagon. Cut. One of the things that happened when people started exploring GMless games was to say, yeah, why the hell do we see all the boring bits? Why don't we just cut to the good stuff? So the concept of adopting scene patterns, like scene framing, what is happening now? Why are we even here talking? Something good must be happening or we wouldn't be having this interaction. So things like, this is the scene where you walk in and catch your partner sleeping with your wife. Start, right? And when the fun runs out from that scene, we cut, and then it's 2 days later and someone's in a bar drinking. And that's not weird, because that's exactly how every movie and TV show you watch works. But gaming didn't do that, right? Gaming would sometimes amorphously go to scenes, but if you think of like a dungeon crawl in the old days, it was just time, right? There was no cutting. It was a continuous action. Likewise, other mediums... Movies are the easiest one. Also, like with movies, we think in terms of camera. Like, what do we see? What angle are we looking at this scene from? Describing points of view. These are all things that now we do in games that, again, we're starting to kind of go like, wait, we could do this differently than before. Yeah?
So, I mean, one of the benefits of a GM game is that you can just sit down with a bunch of randos and play.
Y'all.
GMless seems not to fit that archetype, just because or that situation. I can imagine sitting down with someone and being like, you're terrible. Like, you're just terrible.
Yeah, think about that. You've been playing with terrible people. Right. You just didn't know it. Think about that. Think about that. What are you even doing?
Game, though, where you're sitting yeah. Like, I actually want to punch you in the face because
you're a terrible person. Like, yes. I just found that out. Yes, I have gamed with people for years and years and years and not realized I didn't like them. And that, I guess, is a good thing. I mean, you can play chess with people and never talk to them. That's great. It says a lot. I mean, it's absolutely true. Then in a game where there's a single person with strong social control and can decide who gets to say what and they get to drop the hammer on people, yeah, you can game with jerks and it can be okay. Or not even jerks. Jerks is too strong. But people who have different aesthetics than you or people who like different things than you and their urges can be kept under control. But that's kind of grade school. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it is absolutely true that to sit down in a GMless game where we all have vast power is a more dangerous proposition. Oh, yeah, by far, yes. But that's also the thing that is awesome about it, that you as a player will now have huge contributory powers, creative powers, but they will too. And what's, so I've been doing this for quite a few years now. What I have found is that it has rekindled my faith in humanity. And I'm not saying that lightly. I'm dead serious that I have seen more often than not that people rise to the occasion, and that people, once they get it, there's a thing people go through where they're nervous, they don't know what's appropriate. They will often kind of make jokey stuff because that's easy. Jokes are safe, right? It's hard to talk about serious things. It's easier to, like, Britney Spears comes in. Seriously, actual thing, Britney Spears shows up. That's often a more nervous reaction than really that they just have terrible taste. But if you kind of, when you get past that, or if you make it like, no, this is for real, like, this is your game too, you're an equal owner, is that really what you want? Is that what you want out of this game? I have found over and over and over again that people who did not think they had any creative power or whatever are freaking amazing. And I'm not kidding. I'm very serious. So I run Story Game Seattle, which meets every Thursday in Phoenix, and we've been doing it since 2011, 2010. So a while. And we get total strangers coming in every week, sitting down with other total strangers and playing games in which they have vast power to offend each other. Vast power. Huge power. To offend and to bore each other. And more often than not, they do not do that. And more often than not, they amaze and impress each other and wind up wanting to give each other hugs. Seriously. Not always. I mean, sometimes it's a disaster. That's the thing. For it to be potentially awesome, it is also potentially a disaster. Both of these things are true. It's not a magic carpet ride, but it is, let me put it this way. It is a higher echelon, maybe, of human endeavor to be like, hey, on the fly, let's follow our procedure to try to make a dramatic story like we'd see in a movie with no editing. We're not going to go back. Like, it's done as we do it. And try to make something that is aesthetically appealing and amazing to all of us together on the fly, and we've never met. It's pretty amazing that works ever. So. Where were we? Oh, right, media. Oh, right, we're talking about imitating stories and movies. But again, do we even have to do those things, right? We imitate media, right? Media imitates life, and then we make games that imitate the media. Why are we imitating life, right? It's weird. And so there aren't actually answers to all these things I'm raising, but I'm saying that these are things that people have been looking back at and going like, oh, wait, we don't have to do things that way. We could be a primary creative medium instead of being a medium imitating a medium that's imitating a medium that's imitating a medium, right? Like, here's an awkward question. How to phrase this? PG-13. Okay, so people watch people kiss in the movies, right? You don't really often in real life spend a lot of time watching people kiss, right? Many of the activities that we engage in as human beings, we are learning from watching the media. Every time a 7-Up commercial comes on telling us about the latest urban sport we should be doing, they're making something up hoping we'll imitate it. That a lot of our primary information does come from these weird little reenactments. And gaming is just as equally vulnerable to that. But like I said, it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. We can actually use these creative mediums to explore all sorts of weird material. For example, a game that a friend of mine is working on right now, it's called Mind of Margaret, and the premise of the game is that you were all, you know, like Inside Out, the movie, right? It's like that. See, I'm using a movie example again. You are the emotions inside of a single person, vying for control, right? The person is confronted. There's a single character that's the main character, right? And that's another thing that GMless games have really changed, too, is that in the past, when we were a party, we were a group. That's not a normal story arc to have a group of people. It's not. Whereas with a GMless game, you would often have this person is the main character. It is their story. We're all working on their story, and therefore we can have like a very satisfying core narrative arc. Anyways, back to Mind of Margaret. You're all the emotions inside of this character vying for control. So in one scene, you might be, oh, I'm representing fear, I'm doubt, and this person's love, and we're arguing over the path this character should take. And suddenly we're exploring a much more fascinating aspect of human nature than we would if we were, say, limited to not revealing what our characters were thinking or to concealing our inner secrets from each other, as we often have in traditional games where secrecy is more the norm. Yeah?
What about someone like me who, how would he get into a GM's roleplay?
You would walk over to room 208.
Well, no.
No, seriously. Walk over to room 208.
When I create a character, I don't like sharing. It's mine. Don't
yep.
Stuff.
Yep.
How
yep.
do I get into GM's roleplay?
That's tough. No, I won't lie to you. It can be very tough. It's a cultural shift. It's a different, think of it as a different activity. If you liked football, I wouldn't say to you, well, God, you're going to love basketball. Of course you will. You must. It's not like that. They are different activities. They can appeal to different people. Some people like both. Some people like the whole spectrum of tactical combat to extremely narrative games. Who can say? If you do want to try it, the best thing to do is just to, like I said, sit down and play some of the games. That's something I should say. Me talking about these games gets you nothing, right? Like, nothing. You're wasting an hour. Sorry, guys. You really should be going and playing these games, because playing the games is the only way you'll really have the experience that I'm talking about, or the tragedy that I'm talking about, the terrible experience. 208 is where we've got our sign-up table. We've got story games here all weekend. We have trained, pro, like amazing volunteers who are skilled facilitators who will help show you how these games work, get you on the right path, they'll make sure you're doing everything. But again, some of them have GM, but most of them are GMless. And in those games, even though they're the facilitator and they're teaching you the game, they have exactly as much creative authority as you do. And to your question, yeah, it can be real hard. If you genuinely enjoy the, like, surprise, secret, reveal, what you'll get in GMless games, in these story games, is a different feeling. What you'll get, and I did the other thing where I would, like, build the whole world and 5 years later, 5 years, people would figure out the secret. And I'd go, yeah, they figured out the secret. And that was great. And they loved it. That was great. That's fine. This is you will spontaneously, in the moment, build on something somebody else made. They'll say something, and you will not have thought of this idea at all. But because they just said something, you'll be like, oh, okay, if that's true, I'm going to introduce this. And they'll go, whoa! And they'll be looking you right in the eye, and they'll love the thing you just made because you built off of them. And then someone else will build off of you, and you'll have this, like, synergistic collaborative moment. So it's not the same as, like, think of it this way. When you come up with that secret for your character, you made that ahead of time, right? Still your invention. This is just something you're making right then, and you're just telling them. See what I mean? It's still you creating stuff. Your creation is still the valuable part. It's just, do you do it early? Or do you do it right now, in the moment, on the fly, right there on the table? That's the key difference, I think, between the two styles of play. Yeah?
Can you speak to the constraints of GM-less role-playing? I mean, it kind of seems like you've been saying, make something up,
yeah,
the limit, go wherever you want. Why even have a rule book?
That's what everyone says, exactly. Is that even a game? No, and that's why the collaborative thing before, the reason. All of the games we're talking about have structures of various kinds. Rules are different. There's a whole variety of different kinds of games. But I'll give you a simple example. Would be this game called Shock. And in Shock, it's a social science fiction game, and we're trying to explore big social issues. But the key bit is, when we come to a point, what we're looking for in scenes is disagreement. We want to come to a point in a scene where we, as authors, me the protagonist, you my antagonist, we disagree about what should happen next, or we think it should have a price. Price is a big deal. You say, like, okay, I'm going to, you know, start a revolution and overthrow the government. And you go, oh, awesome, okay, great, that's great. But you may or may not succeed at doing that. But at the same time, you may or may not succeed in saving your son who's being held in the dungeons, right? So now we have these two competing possible outcomes. How much do you want to spend on each of those? Do you want to spend more on overthrowing the government or saving your son, right? So there's a hard mechanical pressure to choose the outcome you want. So it's not just we're all making up whatever we want. A lot of these games will come to a point where, like, okay, we're talking, we're being creative, and now the rubber hits the road, and we're trying to introduce a hard, dramatic conflict, and then resolve it mechanically, like Shock uses dice, different games use different methods. Another game called Polaris uses what I think is possibly the singular most amazing conflict resolution thing ever, and it's the simplest thing in the world, where you can say whatever you want. you know, within realm. Like, yeah, my knight jumps in the air and I chop the dragon's head off. Awesome. But your opponent, your antagonist, then gets to say, but only if. And they can tack something on. And then you get to say, but only if, and tack something on. And you just keep doing that. So there's free roleplay for a bunch, but then when you get to the conflict mode, it's but only if. But only if, okay, I chop the dragon's head off. Okay, but only if your squire dies. Oh, okay, but only if, you know, he knows I tried to save him. It's like, okay, but only if, you know, your other knights think you didn't. Like, ah! You know, or things like, you know, but only if I overthrow the government, but only if the people think you're a tyrant. Like, ah! Right? So you get these, like, what we call the moment where the other person introduces the conflict and you're like, ah! I love that. That screws me so great. That's like such a good, you know, that like, And it's the great thing about that game is it happens so fast that you're if you're on the wrong track, if you're talking about something the other characters are talking about, like, yeah, but your son dies. You see it, go, oh, they didn't care. They're like, I know immediately. It's built in telepathy. It shows you immediately if you two players are talking on the same, about the same thing or interested in the same topics. And you can quickly adjust, go, oh, okay. That didn't work. I'll try a different tack. So it is, a lot of them are, the structure determines who gets to talk and what they get to say is true. Those are the key things. Who gets to talk, right? Who gets to decide what's true? Who gets to know things? Then the last one's not so important. But who gets to talk and what is true are almost always addressed as core things in these rules. Like, oh, you're not allowed to say that. We're playing Archipelago. My theme is law. I get to say what is true about the world on the issue of law. Right? Your theme is weather. You get to say what is true about the world about the issue of weather. Right? So we're free narrating, but we have domains. Again, each game will address it differently. God. Yeah? Gods. Gods is another good one, yeah.
So a lot of this negotiation that's happening, it seems to start from an initial premise even of proceeding to the end of the story, almost like we're going to overthrow the government. It's like, if we're trying to tell, you know, an epic sort of Star Wars sort of story or something like that, already knowing how it's going to end, like this is a happy story or this is an answer, doesn't that take a lot of the twists and turns out of it?
I got like 5 answers to that question. Okay. I got to pick one. One, I just like saying overthrow the government. I enjoy that. Two, because that's a great example. Two, that might be something that just came up in the game. We might not have known it. Three, we might have a game where we literally do at the very beginning say, what is your character's story goal? What is the potential end goal? And either you're going to get it or you're not. The character might not even know it, but we as players know that the arc of this character will be, do they find their son? Do they do they cure the disease? Do they whatever? Some games will have a definite known endpoint, because that's really powerful, because if we have a known endpoint, we can work towards it, and we stay on the same page, and that's awesome, because one of the big dangers is we go these directions, and then we're out of control, right? Having a core focus is great. What happens along the way, like a new game that I'm working on called Follow, where it's a quest, you have an end goal, you know what the end goal is, but the beauty of knowing the end goal is then you can do whatever the hell you want along the way, and you know when you're screwing up. Like, we're supposed to be curing this disease. We haven't done anything yet. Like, we're messing up. We know we're messing up. But then, to get even more weird about the answer to your question, in Microscope, you start knowing the ending. That's the first thing you decide, is the ending of the history. You start with the big scope of history. You summarize it, and you say, like, for example, humanity spreads out amongst the stars and dies out. That's our whole story. Done. That's the first 5 minutes of the game. And then we'll say, okay, let's go into a little more detail. Why did we leave? Okay, great. Okay, and now how did we die out? Okay, great. Now we still know the end of the story. The entire rest of the game is going to be going into the bits of the middle and exploring it and finding out what happened along the way. And what you find is, when you know the ending, if I know the city is going to blow up tomorrow, and I'm playing a scene the night before between a husband and wife talking about their child who's estranged, it's awesome! Because I know they're going to die tomorrow, and they don't. It's so great. And so when they're talking about, like, oh, you know, if only, you know, it's going to be great. You know, we're going to go to that cottage, and I forgive you for all your problems. You know, we know how tragic it is, and they don't realize it. And it also, the other thing is it frees us up as players from vying for an outcome. If I already know this person is going to be assassinated in 2 minutes, I don't have to wonder about that. We're not fighting about whether they get assassinated. They're going to be assassinated. We're talking about what they thought up till then. We're exploring the why of what happened, not arguing over who lives and dies. See what I mean? It's powerfully freeing. And not all games work that way. Most games do not work that way. But the surprises just become something else. They don't become what is the outcome. They become all the middle bits, all the nuances, all the what is this character like. Or even like, you know, if, get back to the assassination example, someone did assassinate this character. Why did they do that? I don't know. Let's go back to their childhood and find out why. Let's explore that entire person's life to get to this point, which, again, can be awesome and surprising. And even better yet, when weird things get introduced, like, okay, that didn't make any sense. We're players, we're human, we're fallible, right? Somebody does something in a scene, and you're like, I did not get where you're going. Like, why is that guy so angry at the prince? I do not understand it. You know what? Now we're going to go back and we're going to play more scenes to explore why that was true. Because it's true, now we're going to explain it by going back. Yeah?
So it sounds like GMless roleplays are like 10 times longer than 10 times.
No. They're so short. That's the crazy bit. A friend of mine who I used to...
These offshoots that you can explore.
Oh, well, that's yeah. It's that because you don't spend any time... You spend much time less with Crunch. You spend much more time getting right to the issue. You pack in so much. A friend of mine who I used to play D&D with all the time had never played GMless games, and I was like, come on, I'll try it. And he's like, but I'm watching the baby. And I was like, come on, we'll take the waffles, we'll go upstairs. We took the baby, we took the waffles, we went upstairs. In an hour and a half, we had made this epic sci-fi 2001 journey of this character having contact with aliens. It was amazing, and we stopped, and we're like, wow. And then we looked at the clock, and it had been an hour and a half. The amount you can pack in, because you're going straight to the theme. You're not, and again, like the scene mechanic I said, where you cut to the good parts. You don't talk about, like, this is me having breakfast. You go to the, this is me getting court-martialed. This is me then, 10 years later, coming back from getting court-martialed. You know, you go straight to the good parts of the movie. A movie's 2 hours long. Why couldn't 2 hours be a story? That should be good, too.
Kind of based on what you were just talking about there is, I mean, like, a lot of these story games are sort of like improv experiences, right? Like,
can be.
They're consigned, they can, like, mechanics to help drive a narrative.
Yep.
Improvisation, but do you see there being value or even a possibility of, for lack of a better term, like a long form version? Because most of them are concise, and I'm wondering if there is a value in it being long form or if that takes away from some of it and, or have you thought about it?
Everybody asks that question because there aren't as many long-form GMless games, and I think there's two reasons for that. One is that when people started making GMless games, one of the big things was, what haven't we already done? What are new things that haven't been explored? And so D&D had the campaign down, right? It's all about that. So the idea of, like, no, what if we could just play in 3 hours and do, like, a tight movie-style format was much more of a unexplored territory, and so I think that's where a lot of focus went in design. But also, I think it's because there's a powerful advantage to having somebody who is like, it is, when you're the GM, it is your game, right? You're playing in my game, and there is a strong social pressure to be like, no, I am the throughput that is going to keep this game going, right? You're going to keep showing up my game. In a GMless game, if we're all equal, there is not a central control saying, like, we must continue this game, right? So I think there might be less social power to keep a GMless game going, because if anybody waffles out, In a GM game, if someone is a little bit weak on it, they'll still show up. You know, they'll be like, well, I'll show up. It's your game. I'll show up every Tuesday, you know. But in a GMless game, because we all have that direct input, we all have to be excited about it. I think it's more vulnerable to discohesion, which sounds really technical.
Can it open it up then to keep going easier? If everyone can play
and move different characters? Some games where you could actually very easily swap people in and out. But often, since the people who played at the very beginning were core contributors to the foundation of the game, they're essential. If you take them out, it's like taking out the favorite writer of your show, season two. Who knows what happens, right? It's completely crazy. And that's actually something that we didn't really touch upon. We touched upon kind of a skirting that because there is no GM making the world, that's a huge thing of what you're doing. You're making an entire world often. In 10 minutes, you're building a whole world, a whole setting. That alone can be an incredibly fun, amazing experience because there you are with these other people and you have now made this unique thing that didn't exist before. You are creating in the largest possible fashion in very short amounts of time. And again, you know, like the old war story thing, the like, hey, let me tell you about this D&D game I played, right? Right. It's it never works. Like, you try to explain to other people about the great game you played, it's never successful because the experience happened there, right? You can't really replicate it by talking about it. That's very true with this as well. You try to explain to somebody about this awesome world that you all created together, it's not the same as if you were there in the room, one of the people doing it. And yet, you will want to so much, right? You'll endlessly want to tell other people about the amazing traditions of the people, the ice spider colony people that you created. And everyone's like, I don't get why that's interesting. Like, no, you don't understand. It ties into the central weakness of their religious system. And you're like, okay. Yeah. But those three people who are at that table are like, oh, yes, the ice spiders, yes. They judge us, you know? And that's the thing, we played, that example was Downfall, but when we played Microscope, we would come back to the same history over and over and over again until after, seven sessions, we had cards, we basically had to move the table, cards on the floor, and we were effectively PhD scholars in this history. We were barely looking at it because, yes, of course, if at that point, if the spawn had moved to this other planet, that would have caused the neurological deficit to change. We were basically had a useless degree of expertise in this imaginary thing. We could have basically all written doctoral treaties about this thing we had made up together. And and that's the thing, I'm making fun of that, but there's a beautiful thing in that, right? Which is that you're there now with these other people who you might not even have known very well, but now you have something utterly shared. You have this bond. You've gone camping together, right? You have seen into their mind, and they have seen into yours, and you've created something together. And even as a total stranger, people from a different walk of life, I've sat down at cons with people before and looked at them and said, these people are not going to get along. And looked at them, and looking at each other, thinking they don't think they're going to get along. And then 2 hours later, they are, best friends, you know? Because they have seen their best side. They've seen their most creative output, which is a beautiful thing. And that, honestly, my current working definition of what is a successful game is flat out, no joke, that these games, what they really do at their core, ultimately, is that they increase the love and respect of the people playing with each other. If you don't respect the person you played with more after you played a game with them, that game did not go well, right? If you do not admire them just a little bit more, that game did not go well, right? That's the purpose to some degree, or the best possible outcome of these games. We don't know each other, we don't know what we're capable of, but when we see someone else respond in an interesting way or a fascinating way, I didn't see that coming. And it's not about performing well. It's not about impressing each other. It's not about I'm gonna wow you with this thing. It's that we're doing it, back to collaborative, we're doing it collaboratively. It's neat because I said something that seems simple, and you said something that was simple, but that was building on what I said, and then someone else said something that was simple, but building on what they said. And before long, we have brick by brick made something amazing without any of us having to be you guys all sit back, I'm going to do something awesome now, right? And that's the key difference, I think. Whereas the GM'd game, the GM's job is to come in with this big thing and be I have created something awesome, and I will reveal it to you, slowly but surely. Whereas in GMless game, we are all going to piece by piece do that very creative process together in the moment at the table and then be woo! And no one else will understand how great it was. The ice spiders! Any questions? Yeah?
Has it ever been known to make a story game and have it go through completion and then somebody turns it into a GM game? Turns that setting or story?
Oh, yeah. 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 No. Tons. Microscope, Kingdom are both... there's whole Reddits about using Microscope to build. They use it to build worlds and then play in those worlds. It's perfect for that, right? There's more games I think that could do that more, but Microscope, for some reason, people really gravitate to that because it is such a grand scope of building an environment. I think that's great. I think that's fantastic. Use all the tools. I think it's fantastic. And the difference, too, is that as a player in that game, if you're playing a normal D&D game, the GM's totally straight traditional GM, but you participated in building the world, you know things about the world that a person in that world would know. You understand why the goddess of the hunt is exactly the way they are, because you made that thing. Yeah, exactly. Because it's a Toshiba, you live there, you grew up in that place, you shouldn't have a binder where someone says, read all this stuff. And not only that, but things you shouldn't know as a character, like dark secrets of the world, you still know them. Again, dramatic irony, it's awesome to know these secrets. You and then you? Question?
It's kind of on that. A podcast I listened to, a believe they were using Microscope, did it at the same time
awesome.
As the game they were playing. So they have, like, these three friends doing the ground game, they
yep.
called it, and another three friends doing all the politics and stuff.
Awesome.
And so it was just kind of one episode at a time blending together, and then, like, for the final episode of the world-building thing, it was like, oh, well, I moved this here. You're moving what, where?
Right, and it was a...
And it's the final boss of the entire campaign.
Right. Yeah, just the because you even notice that even that process of just shifting from, like, you're not just showing up the table to a pre-built thing, you are part of the process of making this whole thing, changes everything. In the back? That was you? Yeah. Well, you focus on the stuff that interests you. That's one of the beauties of a lot of these games is that you don't just say, we don't explore everything equally, right? We might say, like, oh, there's a really complicated religion, but we don't care about that. We're not going to talk about it. We want to talk about, in this particular environment, we might be really interested in the economics. It's up to us. It's up to each player to be like, this is the part of the game that interests me. This is what I want to shine a spotlight on. So it might be... The point being that you can get through, like I was saying before, you can get through so much more material, you can get through to the densest good stuff so much quicker, you can actually cover an amazing amount of ground that you would not even think possible. Like I said, you play Microscope or something, and in the span of 20 minutes, you're like, well, that's 5,000 years of history went by. Awesome. In short summary, like, we've covered a lot of ground. And that's not detail, but then we zoom in, if there's stuff that we're fascinated by, like, yeah, I want to get more into that religion. We then do that. So it gives us, the key bit is that it puts us, you, humans, the important humans, we're all humans, in the driver's seat, right? You get to decide. You don't just say, like, oh, we have to now march down the hallway, we have to open a door, and that's it's a silly example, you know what I mean? You're not going through the drudgery. We used to play all-night D&D games that would be 12-hour games. That was fantastic, 12 hours. And the joke, I think, is, what does they say about D&D? Like, a lot of the games, the 30 minutes of fun jammed into 8 hours. Is that the joke? Which is, I would love playing some all-night D&D. I'm all about it. If you guys have a game, I'll be there. It's fun, but it's a different kind of fun. What I discovered was when I played GMless games and story games, I would be exhausted after 3 hours. I'd be like, oh my God, I have done all of it. Like, I have left it all on the table. Whereas D&D, I could play for 12 hours and be like, yeah, more coffee, I'm good, let's keep going. Because the rapidity of my contribution in a story game is so much higher. I'm contributing so much more quickly, and so is everybody else, that after 3 hours you're like, okay, we all need naps. Like, high five, we're out of here. It's fantastic. Other questions? Are we at time? We have 2 minutes, I think. Oh, so like I said, seriously, 208 signups all weekend. Giant green sign. Really big. Biggest green sign I've ever made. So big. It's huge. Any other questions? Should we have a moment of silence?
No, and seriously,
I really mean this. It's a mistake to think of it as an attack. It's more that we've done one thing for so long that it's a mistake to think that's the only thing to do, right? That's all it is. It's that there's so many ways we could be playing games, and let's go figure them out. Yeah?
What are some of the different ways that you keep track of the story?
A lot of it, honestly, is in your head. Some games we use cards, some games it is. You mean to, like, physically track it?
Well, like, while you're doing it, you say, hey, I'm going to have this happen, and somebody says, well, that can't happen because this is over. No.
Yeah.
Keep track of that.
Most of them, it's like, think of it like if you're watching a movie. I wouldn't say, how do you keep track of what just happened in that movie? You watched it. You were there, right? It's large in your brain. It is happening right now. In a story game, in a GM story game often, you are so involved in what's happening. You don't need a record of, like, oh, what was that last scene about? Because it's like you're playing in a movie. It's in your brain. Afterwards, you're like, oh, my God, that time when he betrayed that guy? Because it is so... You're both an audience member and an author at the same time. It is in your brain. If you've spaced out, the game is going wrong. Like, that game has failed. Cool. Anything else? Yeah?
So most of the story games that I've played always end in tragedy.
We love tragedy.
I
we love tragedy.
Tragedy
yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
But is there
you want a happy story game?
Maybe I want to feel good at the end of
it. You know, we can't do everything here. Come on. No, and again, I think it's because one, tragedy is dramatic and people like drama, people like big things. We love blowing up the world. It's great. Like, because normally you don't get to do that. Like, hey, I could blow up this entire society. How cool is that? I think there's definitely realms for positive games. The trick is that for most stories to work, you have to have some conflict. And conflict often spirals off into more dark conflict. We've played games where we're like, let's have a happy ending. We tried real hard. I know, and that's not true, because often it will be happy for some characters who we like. And so there might be bad things, but someone often gets to ride off into the sunset happily, the person we're rooting for, so. Just like in a real movie, so. Maybe not. Not in Fiasco, that's not gonna happen in Fiasco. Okay, thanks everybody. Give yourself a round of applause. Well done.